You said in an interview that it's your job to make sure the wheels on the truck keep moving. Did you get that from the song, The Wheels on the Truck Go Round and Round?
Absolutely.
Hey, this is Party Like a Rockstar podcast, and I'm your host, Joel. Today's episode is brought to you by Misha's Kind Foods. They're an LA-based small business making the world's finest non-dairy cheese on the market today. They're lactose-free, paleo, keto, kosher, perev, and 100% vegan. If you like what you see, check out the next video. If you like this video, please subscribe and like by clicking the little round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or our other guests on the show, go to joelrody.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle is Joel Rody. If you haven't already read my book, Memoir of a Rody, it's now available through Amazon and paperback Kindle or as an audiobook. I hope you enjoy the show. The intent is like us just meeting for the first time day one on tour and we're drinking beers in the lounge or something. I mean, it's just chill. So it's just fun. It's good stuff. So,
and man, if we did that, you would meet Alan over here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Ross Landis is a front of house engineer and tour manager. He's worked for Nothing More, Asking Alexandria, and Bad Wolves. Andrew Crow is a production manager and monitor engineer. He's worked for Nothing More, Alice in Chains, Rob Thomas, Stone Temple Pilots, Dropkick Murphys, Guns N' Roses, Papa Roach, Evanescence, Hole, and the Commodores. First question here is to Ross, and I'm going to ask you if you're still the king of wishful thinking.
I guess that depends on how many beers or drinks I've had, but yeah, I'd have to say yes, because that's when my alter ego comes out, which I've been named Alan by the Nothing More camp, where you have Ross during the day and then you have Alan at night. So it's kind of, I guess, that's how that rolls.
It's your heckle, it's your Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah, exactly.
Which one's more fun to hang out with, Andrew?
I mean, they both have their perks for sure. I just went through and deleted a bunch of Alan evidence on my phone the other day, actually.
How much did it cost you?
Yeah, to him, nothing yet, but we've got some shows coming up in about 2 weeks, so we'll find out.
All right, second hard-hitting question. Second one is for you, Andrew. You said in an interview that it's your job to make sure the wheels on the truck keep moving. Did you get that from the song, The Wheels on the Truck Go Round and Round?
Absolutely.
I figured.
You know, you just make bad life decisions that make you in this industry that I think I was destined to be a roadie by like kindergarten, maybe first grade.
Yeah. What were you packing?
I don't know.
Were you doing your own lunchbox? You're like, the milk goes on the left.
No, I mean, maybe I picked that up from my mom. My mom made pretty lunches. That's for sure. Maybe I did get it from her.
Your mom's your big inspiration. I like that.
Yeah, man.
When did you guys start? So what's your origin story, since you guys are roadie superheroes, I guess?
I'll let Andy take the first stab at that.
Oh, man. So the elevator pitch started in music in fifth grade, you know. Oh. Got that wonderful trombone player. Picked up guitar in high school. Went to college for recording, music production, music theory style stuff. And instantly, when I got to Minneapolis, I started doing like security work, concert security, just bouncing, being in a barricade, getting beat up. I don't know, like a month or two after I got to Minneapolis. And then that just kind of spiraled quickly into stagehand work, doing local stuff. Had, you know, college band after that, got signed, did some touring. Hmm. And was out.
What was your band called?
Devil Inside was the one that did some touring.
That's actually a totally cool name. Okay, I like that one.
It was great. We got you know, cease and desist letter from Intel, as well as, you know, harassed by NXS, which, you know, it's it was meant to implode, which was great. You know, I was
a
like, oh man,
clear,
I can get
resume up. Builder, clear.
Yeah. I was like front row seats to watching Chaos. It's the only band I've ever been in that my drummer threw a snare at my head during a band practice because we were arguing so good. God bless him, still talk to him, great dude. But yeah, we just played some, you know, real piles.
Throw it back at him?
Oh no, I mean, it went into the wall. I would have had to walk to go get it. He made his point.
See, drummers have terrible fucking aim. I don't know.
That's, I mean, that may be true. I just turned up probably, you know, we were definitely long. It was great. Played some piles and just, you know, had some sound guys not show up. And one of the other touring bands, a bass player, had done the same thing. We're just like, oh man, what are we going to do? And he's like, oh, I can mix your band. I was like, oh, if I can do, I can do yours. And we were like, oh, and then at the end of the night, you know, this bartender chick's just yelling at us to come over to the bar, and she slaps $100 to both of us. She's like, I don't know why there's two sound guys here anyways. And just like this epiphany, we're like, oh my God, people get paid to do this. And, you know, went home and quit the band a couple months, or actually maybe even sooner than that, right after. And I was like, I'm going to really focus on this. I was like, I think I'm a better engineer than I am a guitar player. Oh. And stayed at home and just worked as much local, as much regional. And then that turned into regional and just was handing out business cards. And that was 2000. I think 2004 is when I got my first tour.
Oh, okay. So what was your first nationwide tour then?
Black Dahlia Murder, opening up for Cannibal Corpse. That was in heaven. It was awesome.
Sure, yeah, sure.
Great, great time.
Wow. And what about you, Ross? Is it just because nobody else wanted you, or?
Yeah, basically, you know, I came out of the trash can, everything. no, I actually, I'd say where my music career really took off. Like, I had always wanted to play guitar and do things like that, and it wasn't until I got into a car accident when I was 16 years old where like all my sports, everything like that, was basically taken away for a long time because I couldn't have any sort of contact to my head or anything like that.
That was a bad one.
Oh yeah, it was really bad. And so basically right after I got out of the hospital, I went and bought my first guitar and I started playing, and that was when I was like 15 years old or so. And I had dabbled in like certain stuff like at earlier age. Like I started on the trumpet in like fifth grade, but I only played for like a year or two, and then I was kind of over it, to be honest with you. And which I wish I wouldn't have.
Yeah, don't fucking lie,
Ron. In hindsight, like I love horns and stuff like that. It's amazing. But anyway, and then my cousin, or yeah, it'd be my like my second cousin, was living up here and had heard of a school, like music production school and everything like that, told my grandfather about it. So I then came up to Minneapolis and I started attending the school, and I went for recording and production, but that wasn't really my main focus. My main focus was actually to use that skill set to enhance my own, you know, band. And that was really my main focus. And I think I spent probably like, I don't know, 5 years trying to put this band together and do all the stuff. And then finally a tornado hit our house in North Minneapolis and completely demolished my band. Whoa. But to backtrack a little bit too, I had started at a club in Minneapolis called The Quest back in 2004, just pushing gear, you know, here and there whenever I was called. And then I kind of got out of the whole, you know, production side of things for a little bit. And then it wasn't until I met a guy by the name of Justin Beneke, who's a friend of mine in Crows, out at this club called The Rock. And it's out here in Maplewood in Minneapolis as well, or used to be when it was called The Rock. And that's basically how I actually met Andy and Anthony and Spud and all these guys that kind of took me under their wing and helped me, you know, kind of start establishing my, you know, my sound career and everything like that. And I worked under them for years until I basically kind of went through a little bit of a limbo on how I started touring too. Like I really wanted to start touring when I started there, and then I kind of got sidetracked and I started going to an MMA gym and my focus switched really fast, and I actually was actively training to compete in martial arts and do stuff like that. So I took about, I don't know, probably three or four years off from actually even trying to do anything on the road. And then I tore a meniscus in my knee, which took me out of this thing that I was going to do. And then I basically got a phone call from a band I will name nameless. And I flew to a huge festival, and I got my ass handed to me, and I'll openly say it, I got my ass handed to me. Never mixed this band, flew in, had 13 mixes on stage to do. Here's a desk you've never seen before. Ta-da, let's rock. And it was bad. And it was
so did the battle. Band talk to you afterwards?
Oh yeah, we all had talks. We had a lot of different it was very communicable, probably not on the best terms, but we said some words back and forth. And then and then it was actually in the fall of 16, one of our friends was out with Nothing More and was doing front of house for them at the time. And was called because their monitor guy flew home, and basically I flew in, I took over, started doing monitors the next day, and it just kind of went from there, you know. And then I've just been with Nothing More actually pretty much since 2016. So
good gig.
Yeah, it's been a really good gig. So
and you guys toured together on Asking Alexandria, or?
We've toured together on Nothing More.
Nothing More, okay.
Yeah, it's funny because we, both being Minneapolis guys, it took us a lot. Like I said, I mean, I got my first tour in like 2004. And when did you graduate, Ross?
2006.
Yeah. So we both went to the same school, just years apart. I went in 98, graduated in 01, started touring in 04. He started school in 04. Graduated in 6, but yeah, we didn't meet. And even though he was working at the Quest, which is the same place, you know, one of the places I still cut my teeth, we just never crossed paths, which is funny because I always say Minneapolis is kind of like the Reno, the Midwest, like great people, lots of talent in so many creative and artistic ways, but man, it's just, you know, the Midwest is just kind of leave it alone. No one's out there really looking for attention, so your friends, circle of friends are kind of small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hilarious. So yeah, knowing each other for, I don't know, I mean, 10, 12 years now, right? Something like that. 12, 14
actually,
years.
I think yeah. Somewhere in there. Yeah.
Just this past spring's the first tour we've ever done together.
Yeah. We've been at festivals like, you know, where he's been on a festival paths. With a different camp, but yeah, never actually in the same, you know, in the same exact camp. So.
You got any like fun? I like to ask funny gigs that you guys have had. Any ones that stand out as being odd?
I'll let Andy take the floor on that. I mean,
you do it long enough. You know, like the just to his credit, he called me that next day after his first festival that was in Chicago with the Nameless Band, and I was just kind of like, "Hey, man. You're not a roadie until you got fired. So you took care of that one real quick. Congratulations.
Next
gig's coming, right? You know, like check mark. No, I mean, I've had great times. I feel like as long as I've done this, you know, I think everyone's got their own path, right? So again, there's no, you like, especially with social media nowadays, you just see people and like these guys like skyrocket and whatever you want to do in your life. But I've been very blessed. Like sometimes when I save my resume, since I'm coming up on, you know, 20 years, man, I don't feel like I've worked for that many artists. And I take that as a blessing, you know, like I've been with some good groups that I've been able to stay with for a long time. No matter how I was brought in, I had to throw the Commodores in there, right? Like that was one band that I only got a moonlight with. I did like 3 shows with them. I just saw yesterday the same guy that we know from Minneapolis was out doing front of house for him at Summerfest. And I talk about those guys all the time. I mean, that is just pure talent. I got a call, you know, through the grapevine, like, hey, I'm throwing your name in on this. Just don't tell them how old you are. And I was like, okay, like, you got to preface that for me a little bit. He goes, oh, they hired some kid, you know, out of a production house. I mean, again, you're talking... that band, no matter when they were involved, you know, if they're original or whatever, like the 3 guys that are still singing, pure talent. But that band, I mean, they're just monsters. Just monsters. I mean, it was incredible. And they had hired a younger guy. So the manager was just kind of spooked about that. So again, luckily my resume made it seem like I was older, you know, with the experience I had gained. And I thought it was great, but I had to go do my first gig for them in Denver. We flew in, the manager's like, I mean, it's going to be a train wreck. We can't take our own gear. It's a fly date. You know, we like this band owns, you know, large format Midas. It's all analog. Like they're going to be looking for that sound. And I was like, yeah, man, not a problem. He goes, well, we're not going to have it. I was like, oh, it's not a problem. And rolled up, had a 5D, which, you know, is pretty much any monitor guy's, you know, crutch, but yet tank. You know, they're fearless. You can just get through anything with them. And I just pushed the faders up. And then I was like, I got to make it through this gig so that way I can get, like, to the band's gear. And I did. They were super happy, nice guys, had a great time. And then, you know, we did another fly date, but all the band's gear showed up. And, you know, here rolls it. I don't know, it was like a, it was either a Large Legend or, you know, like a, like an H2 or an H3 or something. And yeah, we started to sound check, and I'm just like hearing noise, and the gear just wasn't maintained. It was just kind of garbage. And, you know, again, everyone hears stuff different, but I was like, I just zeroed out that console and just tweaked out the garbage and just let it fly. And you're just listening to this, you know, beauty. There's no other way. It was just beautiful. You're like, yes, this is so awesome.
Yeah.
And I remember that. Again, I've done, like I said, and I think there's one more show after that, but you just remember hearing that. And you're like, sometimes we're just so blessed in the people that we do get to work with. And it's just, so it's, you know, like, the manager came and they were like, hey, what it is? And I was like, listen, I'm a pretty positive guy, but if you're screwing up this gig, you should probably rethink your career path. You know, like, this is just, get rid of the garbage and let the band play. And I mean, those are, I mean, that's what we're all seeking, right? Especially in sound. And that's just something. I was so blessed to be with those guys. And yeah, even yesterday when I saw Peter's post, I was like, oh, call me for another show. Like, I'd love to get back in there just to do it again, which is pretty funny. But
yeah,
that was a good one for me.
It's like the opposite of Guns N' Roses.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, that's how long you got.
I love Guns N' Roses. I did a couple shows. I didn't do that much for them, but I was a big fan.
I mean, I admit to everybody, it's the same thing as my band. I was like, you know, it was Axl and Friends. It was the Chinese Democracy Tour.
Okay.
You know, when I got the call, it took like 2 weeks.
Was you Pooch, know, right? Wasn't Pooch doing that? Am I nuts?
No, it was when I started, Andy Meyer was there. Okay. And then Karim Costanzo, who was the record producer, was also out. And then Elmo, John Sheldon, was doing monitors. And I forgot the band guy's name. Blake something was the band engineer. And so it was really weird. You know, I got the call from ML, you know, God rest his soul, missed that guy. I was actually just talking to my wife about him today, trying to just tell her funny stories. And a couple of weeks like went by, and I just emailed. I was like, hey, man, like, thanks for the opportunity. Like, obviously, I didn't go. I had no idea who it was for. And he was like, oh, yeah, I got something.
How many times had your wife heard all those stories before?
About ML? Probably more than she remembers, and still does remember who he was because she never got to meet him. And just what a great person. But yeah, I just hit him up at the right time. I remember it was January, and I was like, hey, like, I'm looking for a gig. I'm you know, getting a little starved out. I can't land anything. The winter was really hard. He's like, oh, I got something for you. And like I said, I didn't hear back from him for like 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, it's all good. Like, thanks. So, you know, I'm just blessed that you would even, I mean, I was young. I got that in 2010. No, I was with them in like 2010. So, I mean, I think I was still, or maybe, yeah, it was 2009. I started. So, I mean, I was 29. So I'm sitting here going, oh my God, like, I'm going to, you know, just to be part of the conversation with him, and still didn't know who the band was. And so again, I called him, left him a voicemail, and was like, hey, again, just thanks. I really appreciate you took me under your wing and went out on your neck, you know, to just try to give me anything, just super, super humble. And he called me back just laughing. And he's like, oh boy, you haven't seen anything yet. Just hold on. And I was like, okay. 10 minutes later, got a call from Chris Grattan, was the production manager. Again, I mean, I had no idea who any of these guys were. I mean, I knew Andy Meyer. I toured with Andy Meyer in like 2005 or six with a support band. He was great to me. But I knew he was out there. And I mean, he skyrocketed and was doing, you know, Guns and Justin Timberlake and just all these other crazy things, where when I met him, he was doing Seven Dust. So you just watched him explode out of the gate. So I, you know, had a call with Grattan. He's like, I need you to talk to this person, call him. And I was like, okay. And then I think the dude I called was Mayhew, you know, Tom Mayhew. And he was like, hold on, you need to talk to our monitor engineer, and put me on the phone with Elmo. And then he was like, okay, hold on, you need to talk to Blake. And he's like, okay, cool, here's Tom. And I was like, okay, cool. And then
hung up. And I'm like,
a little notepad out. You're like,
yeah, I'm just like, okay. I just talked to like four guys and I don't even know who any of them were. And then Grattan called me back, like, in, I don't know, 30 minutes later, hour later. And he was like, okay. He's like, you're going to get a plane ticket here, you know, shortly. And I was like, all right. Can anyone tell me who the artist is? You know, like, I still had no idea for it. He goes like, wait, hold on. And he hollered to someone in the back. He's like, hey, did you got that flight? Is it booked? He's like, yeah. Email it to him. He goes, okay, well, at least we're in for, and you've got money into this, so you can't bail on me. It's Guns N' Roses, packed for 3 days. See you tomorrow. Or see you in like 2 days. And I was like, what? I mean, just, I like hung up the phone going, oh my God. And again, went out there, got on with them, did 3-4 years, got completely spoiled. You know, I mean, me and Elmo hit it off great, still talk to that guy. And just all those guys just took me under their wings. And it was a great, great time. You know, I mean, it's everything that you would ever imagine of horror stories, but same time, like all the bad comes with the good. I mean, we were spoiled rotten and just got to do so many cool things and see so many cool places just to see something move around that level. I mean, that was a huge, huge jump in me. And then even stepping out of what I had been doing, which was a lot of the dual hat, you know, like production managing and doing monitor engineer, but like in clubs and theaters, then to just be able to focus on audio at that, I was like, God, this is incredible. Just watching that thing, that it was a machine.
Yeah.
So it was pretty crazy.
That's a good gig. I don't know. I liked Guns. I don't know. I didn't have any terrible stories. Axl was okay to me, sort of. I didn't really have anything. I put in my book that the book was titled, originally it was called Axl Said I Made a Great Cup of Tea. And then people are like, that's a terrible title. Actually, I called Dizzy and I told him the title and he's like, what? I'm like, yeah, it's called Axl Said I Made a Great Cup of Tea. And Dizzy's like, that's the best title that you could fucking think of. I'm like, yeah, it's like really random. I think it's funny.
It is funny.
And he goes, well, how much did you talk to Axl? I'm like, two times. I'm like, it was like the beginning of a conversation. And then later he's like, hey man, thanks for the tea. And I was like, sure. So it's actually like two conversations.
Yeah.
So Dizzy, they're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Dude, that guy does not miss anything. He doesn't miss anything. Even if you're within eyesight, he's paying attention. It is crazy. Like Axel? Everyone. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got the world fooled. He really does.
And they again, is Stuart, was Stuart there when you were there? You know, Stuart? Stuart's like a damn genius for real, like amazing genius guy. So we're in the studio and I don't know, the phone rang and I don't know why I picked up the fucking phone. I'm like the lowest guy on the totem pole. What do I care? So right. I pick up the phone and it was Axl, I guess, but I can't hear. I couldn't hear back then either. So, huh? Who? What? So fire that fucking idiot. And so like I can, and I was all bummed. And then it's like, just don't come tomorrow. He won't even
remember. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was definitely one of my instructions of, again, running with an A and a B engineer that, you know, Elmo's like, I get fired frequently, you know, just let the console burn. Don't ever step up to here because I can come back tomorrow, but you won't. And I was like, oh, it never did happen. I mean, again, Mono World got hot, but we had everything pretty well taken care of and locked down, which again is how we started getting spoiled and everyone was happy. And, but yeah, that, we were in Oklahoma City and just walked down the ramp to the college one morning and he's sitting there with Fernando, you know, eating breakfast. And I was like, oh, hey, and he totally called me out. And he's like, or I'm sorry, I was eating breakfast. They walked down and I got up and he was like, what, you're too good to eat with me? Like totally called me out. And I was like, oh man, all right. And went and made another coffee or something, went and sat back down and just had breakfast with the two of them. And I'm like, yeah, it's impressive. It's impressive. I took over I mixed the band for like 3 years and then I was flip-flopping between him and the band at the end. You know, there was just a bad experience in Las Vegas and one of our guys had to leave and, you know, medical issues, but they end up coming back and everyone thought there was going to be all this big drama between us. And I was like, it is what it is. But so like our first show of our residency in
Las Vegas, that guy walks, you know? And I was like, oh my God. So I started bouncing both consoles because I'm like, I know I'm not supposed to do this, but they had built me a crow's nest, you know? So we were like 12 feet up in the air in this loft. So they couldn't really see what was going on. I'm like, I can't let our first show go down, you know, like this is just not going to be good. And next day, or the next show, we were playing like Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. And the next show, they're like, oh, you're mixing or move your tech over. And I was like, okay. And, you know, he again calls me out, gets on his talk bags, like, how did I go from the best sound I've ever heard to the worst piece of shit, blah, blah, blah. You know, because like they had stopped doing some stuff to his mic that never got communicated to me because I never had to do it. And then they explained it. And, you know, the next day he came out to show and he's like, hey, we're good. And I was like, oh, all right, cool. And, you know, climbed up and mixed the show again. And now I'm like,
Breakfast tomorrow.
I'm like, I'm going for it, you know, because again,
I got you.
his mix is all his vocals, and we had like, you know, just some vocal support side fills flown. I'm like, I can't hear anything, so I just started like trimming up the drums and just, I mean, it's very old school. It was cool to hear it, and again, every change I made, I could barely hear in my mix. And same thing, man. He walked back to his talk back on that third song, looked up, was like, hey, man. Cool drums. I'm like, what? How do you even hear that? I'm like, he's got everyone fooled, man. He does not miss a beat. It's crazy. Yeah. Absolutely crazy.
Have you ever heard of these guys? You know who we're talking about, Ross?
You know, I'm too young for that. No, just kidding.
But
that's, how long ago Alice in Chains?
I'm prepping them right now.
Oh, right.
I just
on.
Got hired. We're doing, we go and do these Nothing More festivals next weekend. And then I fly straight to rehearsals July.
Okay.
July 18th, we go. So it's this next one. Their last production manager, you know, has moved on and got me the interviews for that and, you know, fully supported me, has been giving me information. And I'm excited for that one for sure. It seems like a great camp. I'm really excited for this tour. So, yeah.
Yeah, it should be cool. How'd you get the Bad Wolves gig, Ross?
I was coming off of the last scheduled tour or leg of tour with Nothing More, and we were in the UK, and I was supposed to there was kind of a miscommunication between me and the front house engineer for Asking Alexandria at the time, so I was supposed to go do that. It like I would have had the month off, so I would have been done with tour in like late April, early May with Nothing More. I would have had May off, part of June off, and then I would have flown out to go do Asking Alexandria. But there was a miscommunication, they hadn't decided on a person, and then I had found out that I didn't get the gig and I was scrambling to try to find something. So I put a bunch of feelers out, and a buddy of mine, Robbie Brown, was going to do a Treyu at the time and wasn't going to do the Bad Wolves run. So he said that he'd love it if I came out and filled in for him to go do the Europe run with him. And that was actually the first time I'd ever actually tour managed on that level. I went over to Europe and I don't know how I made it through that tour, but I did. You know, like, to be honest with you, that was crazy. So that's basically how I landed that. And then I've only since gone back and done one more tour with them, and that was this last March with Papa Roach and Hollywood Undead, which that was a pretty fun time. It was a little bit crazier because obviously, you know, just coming out of COVID and everything like that, so there was a lot of different stuff going on with it, but it was still really fun. And you know, It was great to actually get to tour with not only some returning people that I've known, but obviously meet some new guys, stuff like that too, which was super cool. So
yeah,
that's basically how I landed that, though, you know, through the grapevine.
Yeah. All right. So started a podcast, Buddies Have Kids. Yeah, I'm going quicker because I say this thing every single time. So my buddies have kids. My buddy's daughter's in fifth grade. She said I should ask every guest when they first felt famous. So I ask each one of you, when did you guys first feel famous? If you don't feel famous, which I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I don't know. If you don't feel famous, you fucking losers. No, sorry. If you don't feel famous, when was there a kernel in time, a moment in your career that was definitive for each of you? Something that you would say is worth relating back to me, or what would you guys pick?
Oh man, that's a tough one.
It's a good question.
It's a really good question.
It is a good question.
I would say, I would say mine's been kind of in steps. I would say and I wouldn't call it feeling famous. I would call it actually breaking ground and making headway in a ever so, you know, difficult industry to actually do something in, you know, and to actually get somewhere with it. And I would say, obviously when I met Andy and Spud and all those guys, because I actually remember the first time I met Andy, he had just got back off of his first Guns tour, and I came walking in the club and I was doing monitors that day with our other buddy, Anthony. And Andy looked straight at me and goes, "Oh, so you're the kid that got hired here that I didn't know got hired here, at which you're hired here now." And I went, "Yeah." I was like, "Who are you?" You know, like, never met you before. And he goes, "It doesn't matter." He goes, "You and I are spending for the next 3 weeks that I'm home. If I'm in this club, you're in this club. If you're in this club, I'm in this club." You know, and that was actually a pretty, definitive turning point for me, you know, in my career. And then I'll say the other big turning point was like the very first flight that I got to actually go fly out to start working for an actual like national act. That was, you know, I would say pretty, I don't know. It's, you know, cause it's a weird feeling, you know what I mean? Like, you're getting on a flight, you're like, "Am I going to make it? Am I actually going to succeed? Am I going to get fired?" You know, like what's going to happen, you know? And, you know, going back to it, for me, I got fired, you know. I flew in, I was like, "I'm gonna do this, this is gonna be great." And I got out on stage and I was like, "What the fuck?" Like, basically, once we started, and I just, you know, it was crazy, man. And that didn't make me feel like I made it, but that at least, you know, like, it's like taking that step, you know, and that next step forward with it, you know, and just like, you know, jumping into the lions then, man. I think that that's like the main thing. And I, you know, I guess that's my answer to that question. Cool. if that answers it.
Yeah, what do we care? It's a 5-year-old girl or whatever she is.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, but you know, it's got to be impressive to some degree.
Yeah. What do you got, Andrew?
I don't know. Again, I've done so many things wrong and so many things right. I mean, I don't feel famous. I don't ever want to feel famous, you know, like, I get sick of wearing black just like everyone else, but I'm paid to be back there. I mean, I had I can say there's a lot of experiences that go along with one guy, tour manager, front house engineer named Eddie Gowan. And I met him out on that Seven Dust run. He was actually managing Seven Dust. Again, same thing. Andy Meyer kind of took me under his wings. You know, Viggy Vignola was out there doing programming and drums. And, you know, a lot of those dudes just taught me how to cut teeth. And they grew up in definitely like a different era, you know, but they were still like, "Well, you're young, you can be humble." And we did a show here in Wisconsin, and Andy, you know, walked me in and was like, sat me down with Eddie. He's like, "You got to meet this kid. Like, he's bigger than sound guy. He's got, you know, a big picture. You know, he'd be great, you know, like doing production or stage managing or something." And Eddie soon thereafter started touring again. You know, he was like, he did everything he could do with Seven Dust and a couple other artists, and then just went back, and he got a call to do Papa Roach. And that was, I think, in 2006. And he called me, he's like, "Hey, I can, you know, help teach you how to like organize and do all of this stuff." And I've just got, and we worked together for almost 15 years, on and off. I mean, we did Papa Roach together. You know, I brought him into Guns as our tour accountant. We did Stone Temple Pilots together. And there's just, I mean, there's so many moments of just, you know, making those lifelong friends. And like Ross said, I mean, I still, as much as I'm a homebody and I go, I mean, work. You can't explain to people what we do. I just try to dumb it down. I'm like, "Man, we literally load and unload semi trucks around the world. It's not that glorious. Like, there's a great joy to it.
especially coming out of COVID with everyone, you know, of what we've all gone through of building the concerts. But, you know, it's still cool. And you get to land on a different, in a different country.
Yeah.
And see that Rhode family, you know, like I said, just a while ago, I mean, my mom, my parents, both of them, you know, great relationships with them. My mom passed in 2019, but she loved it. I talked to her. That was probably it. That would be it. Like I FaceTime everyone, you know, especially with what we've gone through. It's hilarious. It annoys, you know, so many of my friends, but they still answer the damn phone. Cause they're like, it's Crow. It's what he does. He just FaceTimes people.
I feel like
I would face. You hate it? Yeah.
Oh,
I
do. Yeah,
I love it. I love it. I would, and I would,
cause you got a beautiful mug.
Yeah. Yeah.
Show it off.
I'm a beard ninja. Yeah. I would FaceTime with my mom. And my mom has talked to so many of my artists as they've been walking by or whatever.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was probably it. She was just always tickled pink to hear what I was doing. Where are you? You know, like my dad would shoot me that text, like, where are you? My mom would just call me soon thereafter. Like, oh, where are you at? What's going on? And blah, blah, blah. And just pass that phone off. And she would just talk to so many of them. And she just thought it was, she thought it was the greatest, you know, just thought it was the greatest.
STP with Scott or?
No, it was, I did that first record with Jeff, with the new singer.
Okay.
So yeah. that was 18 when we went to do that. And I mean, again, it was super, super fun.
Hootsie was at a front of house or?
Hootsie was there. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Still, I think still there. Yeah. He's still there. I just talked to another buddy that was out doing like Hoobastank. He texted me. He's like, oh, I'm doing a gig with your buddy Hootsie. I was like, oh, little Hootsie.
Good guy.
That dude, man. We couldn't be further apart in so many like different opinions, but I had so many great late night conversations with that guy. Like he's just the dude that you could talk about anything and he'd be like, I mean, I don't agree with you, but I respect your opinion. And I thought that was great. Guy. I mean, he's God, his stories are hilarious.
Yeah. No, I've been trying to get him on here. He ignores me.
I'm not surprised. He likes to sit at home and
maybe I'll FaceTime him.
You'd be lucky. Every time I called his house, his phone, I don't even think his phone works at his house. And he's like, yeah, I like it. It was a good mistake that I keep. That dude will, like, if you get him, he'll be like, oh, I was chopping wood. Oh my God, Hootsie, man, that's awesome.
He's chopping wood?
Like yours. Yeah, he loves chopping wood. He lives on a lot of land. He's all hidden out.
Is he all skinny? He's like super skinny.
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Oh, he's a workhorse. Don't let him fool you. You got the world fooled.
I just picture like a real buff Hootsie chopping wood now.
Like, huh. That needs to be someone needs to make that meme. Someone needs to do some Photoshop artwork and put Hootsie on a.
Let's find a talented guy. There must be one somewhere.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, I appreciate your time. If you have any other stories, share them. But if not, go get some art for your room, Ross. What the fuck?
Well, this is actually the spare room, and like I would have done this downstairs in the basement, but there's other things going on in the basement, so I can't do it down there.
Wow,
so,
yeah,
I know. I need to get something in here because it is kind of plain, but it is what it is.
Right.
Is your ceiling fan up? Alicia didn't.
Yeah, dude, check it out. Ooh,
oh, it's a fancy looking one too.
Got it.
Man.
Yeah. Home Depot.
Take it back. That room looks wonderful.
Yeah, right. There you go. There you go.
Are you guys still in Minneapolis?
I am. Crow is not.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay, cool.
I'm in Door County, which we call the Cape Cod of the Midwest. I thank my wife for that one too. She comes up with all the tag catchphrases.
We all need somebody smart in our lives.
Oh, God bless her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I do appreciate it. I'm going to bug the hell out of you guys both soon. Do the same. Coming out to Wisconsin or wherever you said you were from like 2 seconds ago.
Yeah. Someplace.
Let me go there and hang. I'll talk to you guys both soon.
All right. Cool. All right. Sounds good.
Cool. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe by clicking the round button on the bottom right. To learn more about me or the guests on the show, go to joelrody.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. The handle's Joel Rody. And don't forget, when you party like a rock star, don't be a dick.